This is Matana Roberts, and you are tuned into CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal. Montreal, a city that I love, 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 love.
What's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. I'm your host for the evening, Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Fall and you can't see your way. Just forget carry on. Come on, Judgment Day. You don't have to mourn. Help's on the way. Cause ain't nobody worrying no more, no more, no more. These are our precious times. Diseases taking lives. Medicaid ran out. Show me a weapon line. There's a brother on home.
Yes, yes, yes. We're back. We're back. We're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominic Ferguson, and we are continuing with showcasing folks doing things during Black History Month. And with us this evening, we have Donna Michelle St. Bernard, who is a Canadian playwright, theater director, MC, arts administrator. She's a three-time nominee for the Governor General's Award for English Language Drama, receiving nods at the 2011 Governor General's Award for Gas Girls and the 2016 Governor General's Award for A Man, A Fish, and at the 2020 Governor General's Award for Sound of the Beast. Gas Girls was also won a Dora Mavor Moore Award in 2010 for Best New Play in the Independent Theatre Division, as well as an Enbridge Playwrights Award from Alberta Theatre Projects and the Herman Voden Writing Competition. Her other plays have included Cake, The House You Build, and Salome's Clothes. Originally from the Grenadines, St. Bernard resides in Hamilton, Ontario. She teaches at the National Theatre School and is currently the artistic director of New Harlem Productions, which is an intercultural, interdisciplinary organization creating work that advances the craft, elevates allies, and engages communities in employing practices based on principles of humanity, joyfulness, and solidarity. And she also has this project. I don't remember the full name, but it has 54 in it.
The 54ology.
There we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Donna Michelle St. Bernard.
What up, what up, what up?
Welcome to Montreal once again, because this city's not new to you. How are you doing?
I am real good, thank you for asking. I'm on the tail end of a lot of activity and on the cusp of a lot more, and this is a great moment. It's good to have this brief moment of stillness to be with you.
Yes, yes, yes. So we got, you wrote a play.
I sure did.
And it's at the Siegel Center right now. Right?
Yes.
And so,
yes.
So what is going on with that play? What, tell us a little bit about Diggers.
I would love to. First of all, thank you so much for having me, Kim.
Always a pleasure.
It's a pleasure. Okay, so Diggers. Let me tell you about Diggers. Diggers was commissioned in 2020 by Prairie Theatre Exchange and Black Theatre Workshop, and they have been supporting the development of the play since then. It started out as a play about grave diggers in Sierra Leone, or rather inspired by the experience of grave diggers in Sierra Leone. And then the world stopped, and that story took on altogether new meaning as we started to think about, where we were going to put all these dead, what to do for the people who were dealing with the sick, the dying, and the dead on our behalf while many of us stayed home.
Yeah, yeah. So the synopsis of the play is Abdul and Solomon introduce newbie Bai, or is it Bay? Bai, to the intricacies and dignity of grave digging for the town down the hill. But when illness hits the town, the three must make the best of a bad situation as their workload increases and their support from the community diminishes. Full of song, laughter, tears, and beautiful humanity, Diggers is a tribute to essential workers. Why was this important for you that we showcase essential workers?
Well, I think I engage with that expression essential workers as a bit of a euphemism.
Okay.
For people who we need but prefer not to think about.
Fair.
And I think that this it comes up repeatedly in our lives. Like, I remember there being a big garbage strike in Toronto, and it started out with people essentially complaining about the demands of the sanitation engineers. Mm-hmm. And then after a few days, just realizing how stinky it got. Mm-hmm. And how much we really, really wanted them to come back. And this has been the case.
On them.
Yeah, like, we rely on them and feel entitled to them.
Yeah.
You know, the day they stop picking up the garbage is the day we find out what the garbage is like. And it is the same, I think, for nurses and healthcare workers during the pandemic. And it is the same for teachers or daycare workers. Like, the list could go on.
Yeah.
But, the way that we treat them, even, like, in and out of emergency, is like they owe us something. Mm-hmm. In a way that we don't feel we owe people our own labor.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I during the pandemic, I was working at Canada Post. And mm-hmm. so I was in the factory first. I was doing the letter sorting.
Sorted. Yeah.
And then when I got employed full time, I was doing packages. I was lifting packages, placing them. And we were considered essential workers.
Yeah.
And it was a bizarre position to be in, where I had to have a piece of paper in my pocket at all times because the hours of work were like before lockdown and sometimes right. after lockdown as well. So I'd have to be traveling in those times. And so I'd have to have this piece of paper in my pocket to be like, hey, I'm allowed to be here because I'm an essential worker.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because I had minimal contact with the public, the impact of that for me wasn't that dire. But I have a lot of friends who are nurses, and you know, it's like if these nurses go on strike, especially now, people are getting sick. We need them, you know. And I think we need to stop taking people for granted. We tend to do that a lot in our lives. We, like you said, we feel entitled to it.
Yeah, and I would say, Kim, that like despite the fact that, or maybe even especially because you weren't in contact with the public, like it is so easy to take for granted that when many of us were staying home, like we needed you more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
Needed our stuff. And you know, we couldn't necessarily go to the store and get new clothes or glasses or
right.
food. And you know, all of a sudden Uber drivers were heroes. And like,
yeah,
just thank you for my dinner every night. Just thank you for my dinner. Listen, like, I'm going to learn to cook one day, but this is not that day. So, I know I just gave away the game by saying thank you for my dinner every night. That's my life.
So what is your writing process like?
Well, it is lengthy. I take it very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I also believe in magic. I believe in magic and I believe in work.
Yeah.
So I think typically my process begins with the story that I'm interested in, looking into the people in that story.
Mm-hmm.
Please let me know if the sound here is becoming an issue. Thank you. Looking like, and I wouldn't say it's like looking deeply into it, but trying to get connected to persons and not just issues is, I think, the first step for me. So I had seen these photos of these gravediggers in Freetown in Sierra Leone, and I was really interested in like their story full faces.
Mm-hmm.
And their postures And so I just looked at those people and tried to take something from that and understand something about what kind of people do this work. Mm-hmm. And what is it like for them? What do they think about doing this work? And then I go away from that material and I try to get out as much as I can of what feels known to me already.
Yeah.
What feels felt or understood. And I try to get something down. And then exciting, unexpected things happen like that. And then I use it, you know, I'm like, why in that moment did that thing happen? This is where the magic comes in. Mm-hmm. And I believe in omens and moments and things like that. So that's what I try to do, is just get moved from an instinct place first, and then go to source material. So reading or interviews or meeting people. And those are the things that test my instincts. Essentially, I'm looking to see how much do I need to adjust my understanding to be able to tell this story.
Yeah.
Then at some point there's actual research and workshopping with actors who bring so much intelligence in deconstruction and analysis to the work, as they're also coming at it from a person first way. Yeah, then it's just drafts and drafts and sitting and not taking calls and trying my best until finally it gets here. Yeah, at some point there's a really tactile aspect of the research. Mm-hmm. So like in this case, it was like digging holes in my yard and apologizing for it later. Just getting it in the body.
Literal holes.
Digging holes in my yard.
In your backyard. All right.
Yeah. And then I smartened up, like probably the second time around when I wanted to dig again, I smartened up and I was like, let me ask if they need any holes dug. Where would they like those to be?
Okay.
So someone doesn't have to fill the holes that I was digging.
Right.
Also, the first time, Kim, I wasn't very good at it. So the holes weren't that deep. You know, I had to go back and have another go. I was like, well, right. This isn't how you get calluses. I must be doing it wrong.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, like, I'm really trying to engage, like, my spirit and my mind and my body, mm-hmm. and my network in all the ways that I can to try to get some deeper understanding of what is going on and what is, like, how meditative that work can be, and also how irritating sometimes.
Yeah.
What it's like to dig in the rain, what it's like to dig in the sun, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Because...
But then also, like, talking to people who are just, like, who have experience working as 911 operators or bed allocators or teachers or all of those things, like, mm-hmm. what makes you feel valued?
Right. Right.
That was a meander.
Sorry?
I said, well, that was a meander.
Yeah.
My process is a meander.
Mm-hmm. And do you have like a particular schedule that you set up once you have like the ideas and all of, you bring it into your body, is there a schedule? Like, do you have goals and
no, expectations? That all sounds really good and organized, Kim. That's not how I work at all. I mean, writing is my primary labor.
Okay.
So I do write every day.
Okay.
I tend to be writing several things at a time. And occasionally I have the privilege to facilitate a room where other playwrights are creating. Mm-hmm. And so I end up giving a lot of advice and then I have to sit down and take it. So that's been a really helpful force.
Okay.
For me working with Nightwood Theater, running their Right From the Hip program, you know, I give advice to playwrights and then like, 2 years later, they'll be like, hey, remember you told me this? And I'll be like, I don't remember that, but what a timely reminder. Let me go do that thing that I apparently told you to do.
So what is some of the advice that you give playwrights that you have to end up taking yourself?
Well, I just did a playwrights workshop last week, or a writing workshop about ways to get started. And one of the things that I had forgotten was to manage your relationship to your writing.
Okay.
So to create an environment for your writing that you want to enter into. Mm-hmm. And the beginning of that is to not say I have to write, but to always say I get to write.
Right. Okay.
So just all those really the little things that make a big difference to this, to how you're sitting with the work.
Okay.
I want to sit with it joyfully, interrogatively. I want to be genuinely curious. Mm-hmm. I don't want to sit down and go, I guess I have to read this now. Like, I want to sit down and say, I love my job. Mm-hmm. I take purpose in doing this work.
Yes.
I'm moving towards meaning, and that is a good thing. There's something about what I do that is contributing to the world. Let's go. And to enter the work with that energy that it matters, mm-hmm. makes a big difference for me.
Mm-hmm. Which brings back to, the last part of your bio that I read, which is you want to do this based on principles of humanity, joyfulness, and solidarity. It's the joyfulness
that's all the stuff I want, Kim.
Yeah.
Thanks for reminding me of that as well.
Yeah. Well, I love the serendipity of like because as an artist myself, I make declarations of how I want to do things, and I'll post it on Facebook or I'll post it on Instagram, and then I live my life, like things happen and I just continue living my life and I don't actively think about it necessarily. Then, Facebook memories will come up and I'll be scrolling through. I'm like, oh, let me take a trip down memory lane. And then I'll be like, oh, I said this thing like 10 years ago and I'm living by that right now.
Oh, wonderful.
And it makes me feel like when I said it, I put it out there and then it just went back into my body, and without consciously thinking of it every day, that's what I'm doing.
Yes, that is the science meets magic part, right? Like, mm-hmm. there's something about reinforcing, there's something about recommitting, and then there's something about the thing you believe no longer being spoken but still being manifested in a way.
Yes, indeed.
And it is good to be reminded of Absolutely. What you intended to do, and it is good to be reaffirmed that, yes, that is what you are doing.
100%, 100%. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are joining us for the first time this evening, where you been? Because we are talking to Donna Michelle St. Bernard, a Canadian playwright, theater director, MC, and arts administrator. She's here talking to us about Diggers, which is a play that's being put on by Black Theater Workshop and is at the Centaur Theater, not the Centaur Theater. The Siegel Center for Performing Arts right now. So please go and check that out. We are Soul Perspectives. We do have to take a quick break, pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
There's a lot going on in the world today. See how it affects Montreal's Black and Caribbean community. Read the community contact. News, features, opinions, music reviews, cultural events, and so much more. Our voices, our perspectives, our community. Published every 2 weeks, pick it up at your favorite community spot or visit us online at our new and dynamic website, mtlcommunitycontact.com. Easy to navigate and lots to enjoy. Archived issues also on the site and available on the web. That's mtlcommunitycontact.com. Stay in contact.
Turn up with my gang, 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 gang. Need to call for scoff. I just wanna turn up with my gang, gang. 24/7, no less, no less. my baby, my only one, my one and only, my everything. You give me all the life that I need. I'll give you everything you want and need. From the moonrise to the moonset, you invade my dreams, my thoughts away. You're my lover and my best friend. You're the only one we ride to the end. You know I'm down to ride, down to ride. I just want you by my side, my side, my side. I just wanna hold you close.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. As you know, a lot is going on this month of February, which is Black History Month. And we have with us Donna Michelle St. Bernard, who is a Canadian playwright, theater director, MC, and arts administrator, who currently has a play in theater at the Siegel Center for the Performing Arts, co-produced by Black Theater Workshop and
Prairie Theater Exchange.
Prairie Theater Exchange. Donna Michelle St. Bernard, thank you so much for being here with us this evening and taking the time to chat with us about what it's like to be a 3-time Governor General Award nominee, and you won some of them things too. Please tell us, like, what is the Governor General Award?
Oh, bro, if I knew, I'd probably have won one by now.
So how'd you get nominated for it then?
Okay, so the Governor General's Award for Drama, it's a literary award, so it is awarded to published works.
Okay.
So that's step one, is the plays had to be produced in order to be published. Then once they're published, they're put forward by the publisher for this award annually. There is a short list of, I think, 5 books. That's the list. That's the pinnacle for me. I've made that short list. Mm-hmm. One day I'll get the brass ring. But to be honest, it's art, and there's no such thing as a best book.
Right.
So it's quite an honor to be recognized by them at all.
Right.
I say them, I'm pretty sure the Governor General themselves do not adjudicate.
Probably not.
It's a lot of books to read.
Probably not. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a great list actually. Like, you know, and there's like separate categories for French work, for poetry, for drama, for fiction. And I mean, if you're looking for new reads, it's a pretty hot list every year.
Okay. And you are working on the 54 anthology.
Oh my God!
What
yes.
is this? What is
Let
this thing
you.
That you're that you're doing? What is this crazy thing that you're
doing? I apparently never
tire
of it. Okay, so this is essentially, it's an organizing principle for my work. Okay. I'm very interested in the stories of continental Africa.
Right.
I am very interested in them, but I'm also extremely motivated by how undertold they are.
Right.
So I tend to be fixated on untold stories or stories that have been told poorly or told from a poor vantage point.
Yeah.
And I think all of Africa is that story. Mm-hmm. And that some really good work that is written and published there doesn't ever make it over here and so on. Anyways, there's so many parts of this. Let me back it all the way up. Mm-hmm. The 54-ology is my effort to write a performance work for each nation state in continental Africa.
Wow.
So Diggers is inspired by grave diggers in Freetown, Sierra Leone during an Ebola outbreak. Mm-hmm. And some of the other works that you've mentioned, Sound of the Beast is inspired by an MC in Tunisia called Weldel 15. Mm-hmm. And Gas Girls is about sex workers in Zimbabwe. And A Man of Fish is about fishermen in Burundi. So, yeah, in part, it helps me to have a very large plan. I gotta do 54 things. Mm-hmm. With each piece, I'm learning something. So it means I'm going to learn that at least that many times.
Okay.
And I'm looking for a different story than the one that we know. So like, for example, Rwanda is very hard.
Right.
Because there's one big story that is relevant and, you know, rightfully a big story. Mm-hmm. But there, it's the, like the one thing everybody knows about Rwanda, and it's not all that there is.
Yeah. It's not the be-all, end-all of the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In general, looking at the continent, when I started, we were still living in the one big story.
Right.
You know, that Africa is a certain kind of place, that it's the story of Africa is about poverty and disease. Mm-hmm. And that there's a way of being in Africa that is the way Africa is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at some point you read a book and you understand that it was, to the extent that it is that way, it was made that way. Mm-hmm. And that it is that way and many other ways. And so it's that. I'm trying to sort my way through that, through yeah. my poor understanding of an entire continent.
Yeah. It's just like how blackness is not monolithic, you know?
Exactly
being,
like that.
Being black and in Canada doesn't mean that we're all the same. And you can't just clump us into one group and expect us to just be able to function. Mm-hmm. And also, like, we have different, just being from the Caribbean, you're from the Grenadines, I'm from Jamaica and Haiti. Like, when I'm cooking, you know, I am mixing Jamaica and Haiti, and it, sometimes I'll throw a little Trinidad in there, or I'll throw a little, like, it's not going to be the same experience. And, you know, if you take me and put me into a, I think I'm pretty open-minded, but if you take me and put me at someone else's house, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to like their food just because right. they're black, you know?
Kim, it could be even the same ingredients.
It could be the same ingredients and it's going to taste the same.
This came first or that came last and it's not going to, that's not how my granny did it.
No.
Yeah, I think that's a really good example. Like food is a really good example. Like we do use a lot of the same things throughout the Caribbean. And so I'm born in Bekwe, which is part of St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
Right.
But my family is from Grenada.
Okay.
And then further back, some of them are from Trinidad as well. And even that slight difference is significant. So imagine how much more across the continent and how different, like, as we know, how different the songs are, like how different the drums are.
Yeah.
You yeah. know, and so.
And even how they're played.
Yes. Yeah, the rhythms. When I was in Mozambique, I visited Mozambique with Shakespeare Link Canada many years ago. And they were like, come warm up with the dancers. And I saw these dance, like professional dancers.
Right.
Leaping 10 feet into the sky. And I said, oh, I'm like, I'm pretty warm.
The sun has done it for me.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm going to warm up with the drummers. And I went and I sat down and they handed me a drum. And I was like, who can't drum?
Right.
Right. Everybody can drum on a basic level. And then they said, okay, let's start. I could not find the one.
You having a Caucasian moment.
I'm an MC. I couldn't find the one. I couldn't start. How embarrassing. So embarrassing.
And they just smiled and welcomed you and didn't
absolutely.
Say nothing.
They're
about
like,
it.
Do you want to work on the costumes? I said, I don't have that skill. I can't do anything for you, man. I'm no good here. May I pour water at lunch?
Water boy.
And oh, you know what? Because everything is in fact a full circle.
Right.
When I went to Mozambique with Shakespeare Link Canada, it was to meet folks at Montsnamuli Dance Theater, which is where I met Pulga Mashashoma, who is the director of Diggers.
Yes.
That's his home troupe that he performed with before moving to Canada. So I just realized that Pulga has seen me not able to find the one and still respects me somehow. Thanks, Pulga.
There's other ways to love and respect people. We can't just art is not a monolithic thing. You know, not everybody can play the drums. Not everybody can dance. Not everybody can do splits and backflips and all of that. We
we all gotta, at the same time, we can visit other lanes, but we stay in our lane. We stay
but
in our lane.
It is so humbling to be surprised that you're not capable.
listen. I turned 43 last year and I was doing a play, and in the scene with my partner, we were doing like the bogle.
Yes.
We did the bogle and I felt something go cluck in my back. And I was like, this is in my mind. We're on stage, like presenting this play. In my mind, I'm like, bro, it's just the bogle. Like, what is wrong with you right now? this can't be happening. And I was like, I need me a chiropractor. I need me a massotherapist. I need not Botox. I need some steroid injections. I need
some acupressure.
This is not happening right now.
Yeah, because when you said 43 and bogle, like, my knee cracked a little bit, you know? Like, we used to butterfly. What's going on right now?
It's no bueno. I went bowling last week and my knees started hurting. I was like, no, this is not good.
Kim, it's going to be like this forever now. I'm so sorry. It's like this forever. But I really had, like, yeah, such a rude awakening when I was, like, in my 30s and I was running through the streets, as one does, and I yelled, yo, let's hop a fence. And then I tried it. Oh, no. No, my friend.
I can hear the song.
That's not your lifestyle now.
I can hear the song. And like, oh, no. Oh no.
Hopping fences was for before I had an ergonomic chair. Okay. It was a different time.
The ergonomic chair. Oh god. I need an ergonomic chair. This chair is breaking my back right now. Wow. So where are you at in the 54?
In the 54ology?
Yeah.
So this will be the, I think the 13th, 12th or 13th production.
Mm-hmm.
And then 1 month from now, there's a double bill of another two.
Okay.
New works that have not been produced yet. So I would say I'm over 20% complete, but this year I'm really running pell-mell towards 40%. Like, I'm just, things that have been in a lengthy gestation period are becoming fulfilled this year.
Right.
And it is astounding to me that I might actually make it. I might actually make it to 54.
No, might. It sounds like you're making it.
Yeah. I'm going to make it. I just have to keep crossing the street carefully.
Yeah.
I have to eat my bran and my vitamin C.
Don't hop no more fences.
Yeah, no more fences. Don't climb any trees. Just be careful. Yeah, a play is such a lengthy undertaking, and it's so worth it, you know, but it takes a long time.
How many drafts do you go through before you get to what you feel comfortable to present?
I have always had this question of what is a draft?
Okay.
And Drew Hayden Taylor says a draft is when you've changed 30%, and I don't do math real good.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's really what I do, but in terms of, like, being willing to show it to someone, maybe 8 times I'm willing to show it to somebody before it's done.
Okay.
And or 8 versions are showing ready before it's done. And that'll be like, come to the first reading with 6 pages. And I just want to hear it. How, like, where's the breath in this? Are these people, like, are these quick people? Are these, like, drawling people? Like, what are you getting from this? What's there?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll go double it and double it and double it. So that's the first 4 drafts, is just try to double it.
Okay.
And then after that, the next few drafts, I've moved 3 commas in a period, you know, but, like, really moved them seriously.
it changes the whole pacing of a scene, yeah. type of
something,
thing.
Yeah, something happens. in those last few drafts where like it feels like nothing's happening, the page numbers are the same. I just have to stop looking. Mm-hmm. The word count is very similar, but I'll hand it in. I'll move three commas. I'll hand it in to my dramaturge and I'll say, tell me your thoughts about that. And they'll point things out that they say are new that right. were always there.
Right. Wow.
You know, and this, it's like this every time. And so like I do, I respect that small change so much. Mm-hmm. Because they'll be like, oh, I love how there's suddenly a tree. And I'm like, yo, that tree is the first thing I ever wrote, but you haven't seen it for 2 years. Right. So that comma was everything. Mm-hmm. Or the things I put around it that made you able to see why the tree mattered to me.
Yeah.
They just arrived. Those things just arrived.
Yeah.
You know, and then passing comments become the most pivotal line all of a sudden. And it's that's also the magic part. I don't know why. I don't know why you can see the tree now, but I needed you to see it. And now that you've seen it, we may move forward.
Mm-hmm. And is it that the pieces have in order to get them produced, what has been your process like?
So my first play that was produced was Gas Girls. Mm-hmm. And it was almost a dare. Okay. I produced it myself.
Okay.
Through my company, New Harlem Productions. I tried to get it produced and I understood what that work was and I was not up for it.
Okay.
I was not up for making it more clear. Like I felt like this was the amount of clarity that I was comfortable with.
Okay.
This is the script. Gas Girls has a strange dialect, just a made up dialect that they speak in.
Right.
That a lot of people found very off-putting on paper.
Okay.
And so I just decided I had to show you what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. And I think the first two or three plays, so like maybe half of my work I produce myself.
Okay.
And I enjoy that a lot. I enjoy that work. I enjoy employing actors of color. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy sharing my vision with the director or someone who like stays engaged with me but brings something to it and understands what I'm trying to do and has something they're trying to do as well.
Yeah,
I love that a lot. And then it's so much work, fundraising and everything. Mm-hmm. So I would say that it's off of the recognition of that first play, which was nominated for a number of awards, that the community grew their faith in me stronger and believed that when I show you something on paper that doesn't immediately fall into place, that you can trust me that the director will get it there.
Right.
Or the choreographer or the sound designer, like all these people, so many people, of course they're going to get it there. They're geniuses.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they're doing things that like never crossed my mind. Like I rarely describe the costume, mm-hmm. but it does contribute so much to the narrative and to the understanding of like class, mm-hmm. and place and aesthetic and all of those things. So, it's convincing producers to have faith that what I have done is not everything, but it is enough for the collaborators that are going to join in the storytelling.
Right. And as a playwright, how involved do you get, or let's take the question over. As a playwright, how involved were you in the beginning versus now that you've reached past the 20% mark?
Oh, that's so interesting. I've never been asked that before. Mm. And it is...
Because, okay, so why I'm asking the question is I just completed my first... solo play last year.
Can we take a moment?
Huh?
Can we take a moment? Congratulations!
Thank you.
It's a big moment.
And I had the stage reading, so I was able to get a grant and I was able to produce a small stage reading, and I was in there with the director Mariah Inger was my director, and oh, nice. Like I had to like I would hear them talking and I'm just plugging away at the computer trying to fix things and whatnot to have a draft ready for the show,
And I had to like, Kim, you are not the director. Shut up. Shut up. Just let the director do their job. You know, and there was a temptation to like, no, this is not how the character is, you know, like, because it all happens in my head.
Yes.
So I'm curious about like, you know, what was your process in the first, like how involved were you? And then now, like, yeah, without putting words into your mouth, like, I want to know.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. And what a harrowing experience you've been through, I must say. So I'm going to meander a little bit around this as well, because there's so many things, so many factors. So when I first started writing, I would often have a very specific actor in mind.
Right.
Or a type, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And things would happen like, this actor got pregnant and can't do it and we need to recast. And it's not really respectful to look for the second best Jennifer. Right. It's not very respectful. So we'd have to, like, you know, rethink that. And like, what are we actually looking for if we're not looking for Jennifer?
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes working with senior actors, they would become unwell or pass away.
Right.
And that was devastating.
Yeah.
When my heart was set on them. So Yvette Nolan, when I was working at Native Earth Performing Arts, gave me a really good piece of advice, which is to always cast wrong at least once. So in workshop, to cast some people that you don't think are right for the part, because they're going to show you something that is out of your head.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to show you something that's on the paper that you didn't see was there,
mm-hmm.
that comes through them into the character. And that expands your way of thinking about what the character is. So now I try my best not to decide what that character is like. You know, my character descriptions are like, she is fast, he is slow, she is eager, he is tired. That's it.
Right.
I don't say how old they are. I don't say how tall they are. I don't think that's my business.
Okay.
They are like, character descriptions to me, when I read them, are often not what I'm seeing in the story.
Right.
It's an idea the playwright has of the type of person they want to write, but that's not necessarily who you wrote.
Right.
So I believe the scenes more than I believe your description of this person.
Right.
So that's one thing. I'm much less particular about casting, or I'm particular about certain aspects that are critical to the character and not age, height, weight.
Right.
And so on. The part that you're talking about where you're in the room and they're talking about it and they're like talking about it wrong. That is the hardest
and
part.
And wrong is only a matter of perspective.
Wrong, right? Air quote wrong.
Air
yes.
quote wrong. Yeah.
They're talking about it in a way that is not a one for one lamination of how I had intended them to talk about it. And so now I'm really aware of how that is the gift,
mm-hmm.
of how the limits of my perspective are mitigated by bringing in these other perspectives who are like, you know, that like, this is really dark here, or this is very offensive, or I did not know. Right. I did not know until you were in the room to see it and to say it to me.
Yeah.
My mother is a teacher, and she taught me that a fact that is told to me is not learned, it is memorized.
Okay.
And something that I come to an understanding of, I will never forget. Partly because that understanding that I arrive at, and then knowing that it is good, what I've arrived at, is such a full, is such a pleasant feeling, that feeling is now attached to that information.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the part of the workshop where actors are talking about it and they're saying, like, I think that she's a giraffe. And you're thinking, well, she's a girl, and I'm going to tell them that she's a girl. I want to tell them. Because they keep talking about this giraffe.
Right.
But if you sit for a day, at the end of the day, someone's going to go, this is not a giraffe. It's a girl. And they will have arrived at it for reasons that are not the same as the reasons that is clear to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just told it to them, they wouldn't have gone through that journey of getting there, and through which they've discovered lots of other things.
Right.
Anyways, it is such rich work that actors do and that directors do. And it cannot be replaced by telling them the right answer. Absolutely. And often I get to the end of the play and I discover I did not have the right answer.
Which happens. Which happens.
Yeah, like we only know what we tried to write. Sometimes we don't know what we did write.
Yeah.
And so because I have a face that will not lie, the difference, the answer to your question from many moons ago, the difference in my process, my presence in the room is I am in the room much less.
Okay.
Is that sometimes an actor says something so profound and I want to cry. Mm-hmm. And my face looks like I don't look like what they said. Mm-hmm. And that makes them, it gives them the desire to change it. They right. can't help seeing me. They can't help evaluating how I'm receiving the work that they're offering. And sometimes I mislead people with my face. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just because my heart is broken by something that they've done that is so perfect. Mm-hmm. And the next time I see them, they change it because I made a bad face.
Right.
I'm no good in that room, Kim. I got to be there as little as possible.
Yeah.
So I think this has maybe always been the case.
You need to be shrouded in like,
exactly. Yes, you need to put a bag over me.
You need to have like a cloak that they can just see your eyes.
This is basically what I am
some
now.
Harry so Potter sometimes stuff.
I'm in the room virtually, or I'm there for the first read, mm-hmm. and then I go away. And I now understand my job in production to be among the resources of the play's creation. So, like, if you have a book about Sierra Leone, mm-hmm. and you have me, we are equal.
Yeah.
Call upon me as needed.
Yeah.
If you want a clarification. But for the most part, I have learned that people prefer to find it themselves than to have it told to them. And that is a relief because there's only so many times you can say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why I did that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Felt right.
Yeah. Felt right at the time.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen. If you are joining us for the first time, we are speaking to Donna Michelle St. Bernard. We are going on a playwright's journey into 54 different plays. We do have to take a quick break because, you know, it's Radio Land. We got to pay some bills. We got to play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Data, our data. When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Coombit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at coombit.org or email at info@coombit.org. That's K-O-U-M-B-I-T. We are not on Facebook. You better rock with Jimbo.
Let's go, boy. ATL, talk to him, low.
How could I possibly be inconspicuous? Ridiculous. That's quite an accent. See, I'm from the South. Uh-huh. But some of the most beautiful things come out my mouth. And I'm on stage just as soon as I come out the house. So I might as well give them something to talk about. I bust a rap to make a blind man believe in the boogie. And if you came here, the movie's eating the boogie.
And goes in the mouth. I come from the back roads in a dirty house. If you leave the door open, mama, cuss you out. I got a big dog in the front yard. Best put leave that bite hard. I got a granddaddy who think he's your car. And that's how we do it around these parts. Oh, when you want me to come,
holla.
When you want me to come,
call me.
When you want me to come,
I'll be around.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and as a part of our celebration of Black History Month, we are talking to some people who have some interesting and amazing things going on in the city. Right now with us, we have Donna Michelle St. Bernard, a Canadian playwright, theater director, MC, arts administrator. She's a three-time nominee for the Governor General's Award for English Language Drama. The plays are numerous. Gas Girls, A Man of Fish, The Sound of the Beast. Gas Girls won a Dora Mavor Moore Award in 2010 for the Best New Play in the Independent Theater Division, as well as an Enbridge Playwrights Award from Alberta Theater Projects and the Herman Vogden Playwriting Competition. Her other plays include Cake, The House You Build, and Salome's Clothes. Donna Michelle St. Bernard, thank you so much for being here. I am so happy to have you back. It's been a long time since Sound of the Beast. I think that was back in 2016 or 17. It feels like an age ago. But I'm very happy that you're back in Montreal and that we have Diggers going on. So I have a question for you. What is something, because before the break we were talking about your process and you know, you started off kind of producing the shows yourself and then kind of being in the room for what you eventually found out was a little bit too much because you have an overly expressive face and you don't want that to affect the actor's discovery of their own character because they have to live it within their body. And I wanted to know, what is something that you learned about yourself during this process of writing this first 20% of your 54 anthology?
Wow. Something that I learned about myself. Well, I think I know that I have an active imagination, mm-hmm. and a short attention span. And when I was a kid, I used to say I'm bored all the time. And my father used to say, if you are bored, then you are boring. You do not enjoy your own company.
Wow.
And therefore you should not inflict it on others. My father was a well-spoken man.
and a very savage man, well-spokenly.
Savage!
That is savage! That is making you take accountability before accountability was a thing.
Yes, if I ever get bored, I'm like, how am I being boring right now?
Wow.
I
like that.
So the thing that has surprised me the most is my stamina for this work. Mm-hmm. I never tire of thinking about Africa, learning about Africa, talking about Africa, meeting people and hearing stories. I never tire of it. Mm-hmm. When I received my first award for Gas Girls, it was a pivotal moment because I'm spiteful.
Okay.
And I got up and I said, thank you for acknowledging this work. I will now do it 53 more times. And they laughed at me.
Wow.
They laughed at me. And they have no idea how powerful that was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to get you. But I was afraid that I wouldn't sustain. 54 is a big number.
Yeah, it is.
And it takes a long time to write a play.
Yes.
I am just getting started.
Mm. I like that.
And that surprises me.
I like that. Well, nothing adds fuel to my fire more than someone saying to me, you can't.
Bro, you get it.
You can't.
You get it.
Like, I'm always like, and I've been this way for well over 20 years. Someone said, rarely do I hear that because most of the time I've convinced the person that I'm able to do whatever it is. So, you know, I guess as a male, like, people tend to believe males more because our society is still very patriarchal and into that. But whenever I hear, we can't do this, we can't do that, I look at the person and I say, okay. And then I just go ahead and do it.
Just go
ahead and do it, because I really enjoy these Instagram videos, and there's this one in particular that that is stuck in my mind. It's of a skit where a woman is talking to her man, and she's like, you know, how do you stay so centered and calm? You're always like, you never get upset. And he says, you know, well, whenever I get into an argument with somebody, and there's no, it's like he's saying, there's no way that my point is going to get across, I just tell them, you're right. And then she goes, but you can't do that. Da, 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 da. And she starts arguing with him about it. And then he says, you know what, baby? You're right. You're right. And she's like, yeah, of course I'm right. And he just looks at the camera, and I'm like, I never did that before. I never made it so succinctly, but it's like, okay, you're right. Like, why are we arguing? You're right. Yeah.
Why am I spending energy here?
No.
I could spend that energy over there proving you wrong.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have to prove you wrong. I'm just going to do the thing.
Just going to do what I'm here to do.
You know, I'm here to create. I'm here to do this project that I want. It resonates so much with me. The enjoying what you're doing. Because I wake up every morning between 3:40, and it's been bizarre, between 3:45 a.m. and I would say 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. I wake up every day between those times, and I've made a decision for the last 3 weeks that if whenever I wake up, I get up and I have three sets of journals that I can write in. One that's mandatory is my gratitude journal. I always, always, always write in that journal. The other two, I have a dream journal. So if I had a significant dream, I write it down. I try and get it out as much as possible. And I have a journal where I'm writing letters to my son. So I have those three things. And then I'm writing 500 words in my novel. I'm working on a novel.
Every day?
Every day. Every day. 7 days a week. No break. And I'm just like, once I get that done, I usually get it done within an hour, hour and a half. Once I get that done, I'm just like, yeah. And more time when I'm writing the first 200 words, I'm like, oh my God, like, how am I going to do this? Oh. And then my fingers start going, and I try to put my mind into a free write. So I'm not thinking, I'm just writing, and I keep going. And the next thing I know, I'm at my 550 words. I'm like, oh, I'm not done yet. I reached 700 words. I'm like, no, not done yet. And then I have to stop myself because I do have to get to work. I do have to you know, I do have other things that I need to do, but that joy of just like getting that first block of writing out, regardless of whatever, you know, I always have the gratitude one, which to me is so important. And I've incorporated gratitude to the ancestors. So I have names of people who've passed, you know, starting with my father, going all the way back to my great grandparents. So I have like a huge chunk of my gratitude journal that just keeps getting longer as I'm discovering, oh, there's this ancestor I need to make sure I honor. It gets getting longer and longer, but being in a state of gratitude and just, you know, just enjoying this process of writing and enjoying this process of creating.
I really like to think of you entering into every day like as the person you intend to be. Mm. Like by the time you step out of your house, you already are the person that you intend to be.
Yeah.
Just like, what must that be like walking around the world knowing what you're like?
Yeah. You got to be who you are, because if you aren't, then who are you?
Damn. All right. We get to work on that. I can only be who I am. I don't need to find the one. You expect too much from me. That's not who I am.
How did your journey into artistry begin?
I don't know. I feel like I've been telling stories since ever. Mm-hmm. I remember writing stories in literally grade one, and the way they would manage my inability to be in class was they would let me go and read them to the kindergarten class. Right. So it, like, I don't know, I probably told stories to my mother's womb somehow. But I came into theater from being an MC.
Okay.
That was my storytelling form. That still is my natural narrative form. And then I was employed by Native Earth Performing Arts as a theater administrator. And they taught me every little thing, everything. Like, you know, about how plays work and how to be a good person in the world and how to have patience with myself and others. Mm-hmm. And it really was, I started working there because of Yvette Nolan's work, Anime's Movement.
Okay.
That is about anime aquash. And in that play, Yvette, or the play as it were, accused the FBI of murder. And I went for a job interview and I was like, I have questions. Are you allowed to do this? Like, who got killed when you did this? Mm-hmm. You know, because that's what they do, you know? And so I was like, you just said right out loud, you said this thing right out loud that's counter to the historical narrative, and you're allowed to do that. And it was important that you did that. And I respect you for doing that. Can I also say anything? Can I say anything that I know to be true? Mm-hmm. Just like, who's stopping you? Okay, bet. This is it. I'm home. Let's go. Let's do something meaningful. Mm-hmm. Let's say something that needs to be said.
How important is the truth for you?
Paramount. Paramount. And I was thinking the other day too about like, how much I say to emerging playwrights in particular, like, you're not writing a documentary, like put down the research and do your work, like do your make-em-ups. Right. We're not writing documentaries at all. But there is a truthfulness in fiction that is still possible. I believe in that. That's maybe is an airy-fairy thing to say, but I believe that the things I write are true, even if this is not exactly how they happened.
Yeah. Yeah. There is work. I believe in the multiverse.
Oh, yes.
Right? So going to go down a bit of a rabbit hole. I believe in the multiverse, and there's some interesting work that I'm working on currently. It's announced, so I can say it. I'm in a play called Dominoes, and it's based on the novel by, well, is it a novel? The series of short stories by Kai Kello. Mm-hmm. And in a couple of them, there are moments where it's like he takes a person from a different story in someone else's book, brings him into this book, makes him almost a main character in his own short story, but then takes something that really happens, like there is an, I don't want to give it away, but there's an actual person in an actual space that is referred to in the book and now in the play as well. And that person goes from being this character to being like a shop owner, being this person that's like significant in like historical things and like creating like problems and probably removing problems as well. Mm-hmm. So that without saying too much, hopefully. And like, I'm looking at this and I'm like, there is a reality where this happened, where this person who's like significant in history and caused a lot of things to happen and was hired to shift and change things really existed in some parallel universe for me.
As a shopkeeper.
And now he's a shopkeeper and, you know, nondescript and like, you know, doing the regular hustle thing. Oh, you know, I'll give it to you for this much and da 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 da. Mm. And then it made me realize that what you said, and this ties back to what you said earlier about essential workers, like we really don't know who's walking in our path. We don't know who we're shaking hands with. We don't know any of that. Like you could actually meet someone in the supermarket. Hey, how you doing? And that person's a serial killer. That's an actual possibility. And then you could meet somebody who like had like political influence and they're sitting down, they're homeless. You know, there's people's stories. Yes.
I would go up from possible to likely. It's likely that we encounter such people.
And I was just like, I remember one time speaking to someone and being like, I'd known them for a while and I say, what do you do in life? Like what do you do? Like what are you up to? And they started telling me, and I was completely fascinated because I hadn't realized just how much they do.
Yeah.
How much they do.
And this reminds me, too, of, like, just artists in our community who typically we're aware of their most visible role. Mm-hmm. So somebody acts, to me, they're an actor. I don't have a lot of questions beyond that. Mm-hmm. And then I find out that they're like carve their own furniture or something, honestly, that I'm like blown away.
Yeah.
We do not know each other, Kim.
There's that too. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're joining us for the first time this evening, we are just going on a wild journey into the artscape and into discovering humanity, discovering people with Donna Michelle St. Bernard, who is a Canadian playwright, theater director, MC, and arts administrator. She currently has a play in theater at the Siegel Center for the Performing Arts, co-produced by
Black Theater Workshop and Prairie Theater Exchange.
Yes. But, you know, it's Radio Land, so we got to pay some bills. Why do I keep saying play some bills? We got to pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked. We are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
I'm from outer space. I got Milky Way for blood, evolution in my veins. I'm gone. I've been far away. I'm illuminated. I'll make a move. Start a waves. I've been dreaming. Oh,
way. Trouble is, trouble is, trouble is troubling. They don't love me anyway. Don't get my feelings hurt. I know the ceiling's wrong. Don't get my feelings hurt. This time I'm not the one. Don't get my feelings hurt. Don't say I'm not the one. Don't get my feelings hurt. I'ma vibe out today. I'm a vibe out today.
This is a social experiment. Jonathan Amell. God bless America. And everywhere else the same.
Viva Fidel. Viva Fidel. I take care of my people like Viva Fidel. Viva Fidel. Until everyone equal like Viva Fidel. Viva Fidel. We stay elevated like Viva Fidel. Viva Fidel. My squad educated like
we. Oh, no. Do you think what I say?
Well, I'm all for democratic rule. As long as the little children go to school. As long as you can roll them to the hospital. And getting turned down for money is impossible. How you feel if the great-grandson of a slave took a piss on George?
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we are in the month. The month that is called Black History Month. I call it Black Artist Employment Month because most artists tend to be getting a lot of work around this time of the year. And with us this evening, we have Donna Michelle St. Bernard, Canadian playwright, theater director, MC, and arts administrator. She is a three-time nominee for the Governor General's Award with a 2011 nomination for Gas Girls, 2016 nomination for A Man, A Fish, and a 2020 nomination for Sound of the Beast. Gas Girls also won a Dora Mavor Moore Award in 2010 for Best New Play in the Independent Theater Division, as well as an Enbridge Playwrights Award from Alberta Theater and Herman Vaudin Playwriting Competition. So, this is an accomplished playwright that we talking to. Donna Michelle St. Bernard, thank you so much for being here this evening. So you've got a play.
Yeah.
It's here in Montreal. Little thing going on in Montreal. I heard good things about it. How should people prepare themselves to receive your play?
I think just by choosing to be present with it in that moment. And I think they should prepare as if they were going to meet new people that were friends of their friends. Mm. You know, just be open, be ready, be present, and take it as it comes.
Right, all right. So that play is Diggers. It's a world premiere that started on February 1st and runs until February 17th. So you got a few shows left to catch. And the synopsis of the play is that Abdul and Solomon introduce newbie Bay by to the intricacies and dignity of grave digging for the town down the hill. But when illness hits the town, the three must make the best of a bad situation as their workload increases and their support from the community diminishes. Full of song, laughter, tears, and beautiful humanity, Diggers is a tribute to essential workers. And tickets are on sale at thesiegelcenter.org, so you can get those online. Where is it? 5170 Chemin de la Côte Sainte-Catherine, Montreal, H3W1M7. The Siegel Center for the Performing Arts in the studio. Just a few of the people on the credits. So we got the director is Pulga.
Pulga Mushishoma.
Mushishoma. There we go. The dramaturg is Thomas Morgan Jones. The associate director is Montreal's own Lydie Dubrisson. Our cast includes Chance Jones, Jelani Gilbert Naren, Christian Paul, and Warona Setsuaelo. Our creative team for this play is, I keep saying our as if I'm still working at Black Theatre Workshop. So we got the set designer, Courtney Moses, the costume designer, George Michael Fonfon, lighting designer, Tim Rodrigues, sound designer, Elena Studley, stage manager, Elise Canel, and the technical director and production manager is Lee Tucker, a.k.a. Shop Dogs. I'm seeing Shop Dogs.
Yeah.
Okay. And the apprentice stage manager is Catherine Sargent. Tickets are ranging from $27.50 to $40. You can call the Siegel Center, 514-739-7944. Donna Michelle St. Bernard, thank you so much for coming and being on the show and, you know, sharing your journey with the Montreal and whoever else is out there listening. Really appreciate you, and looking forward to number 54. And maybe at number 54, we'll do another interview and you'll be like, yo, baby, I made it. It's done.
May we both live to see it.
We will live to see it. I'm putting it out there. I want to see the 54th. The 54th. I think about the 54 states of Africa or the 54 countries of Africa. Like, there needs to be a flag that unites Africa that way.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Because people have made, like, flags symbolizing what would the flag of Africa be.
Yeah.
You know? And there's a part of me that I like it, but it's also influenced by the American flag, which I don't really like.
Oh, boo.
But it still looks good. It still does look good, right? It's like 54 different little Africas with like the red, green, and gold. So it's not bad, but let's take out the American influence out of it.
Well, and that number's going to keep shifting too, right? Like Sudan and South Sudan are now two entities, and like among numerous other changes in my lifetime.
Yes.
Anyways, I want to thank you for a great conversation, and my mother thanks you for repeating my accolades so many times.
Listen, I believe that we need to, when people are given certain accolades, they need to be repeated.
Thank you.
So that people understand them and know them, because they're significant. They are significant. Donna Michelle St. Bernard, thank you so much for passing through Soul Perspectives. I wish you an amazing run, and may the next play be as amazing as the first and as good as the next.
Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of tonight's show. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. You have been listening to Soul Perspectives. We're going to be bringing you more stuff going on throughout Black History Month, and of course Teen Talk at the end of the month. So keep it tuned in to Soul Perspectives every Tuesday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. You can find us on 90.3 FM, or you can find us online at www.ckut.ca, where you go to programming and Tuesdays and you scroll down to Soul Perspectives and you can listen to all the shows that you may have not listened to before. One last note before we go. This year is the 30th anniversary of Soul Perspectives, and we're going to be doing something big for the community. We're going to be doing something at the Belmont. It's going to be a summer fall event. So please, please do keep tuned in for that, because we want to celebrate 30 years of Soul Perspectives in Montreal. And that wraps up the show. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. You've been listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Kill me, 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 kill me
I don't take for the game, she no pitas. I decide bad mind from a distance. Not this sweet, I be all on my pitas. Yeah, oh, no, ni misha. Show you the confirm, huh, for your speaker. This time I call chopsticks for assistance. Show we they blow your mind, Afghanistan. Kilometers. I don't come, I don't come kilometers. I don't walk that many kilometers. Learn from the teacher. I don't take for the game, she no pitas. I decide bad mind from a distance. Not this sweet, I be all on my pitas. When you come, make I give you digits. When's the last time somebody did it like this? Too much ice on my bumper clubbers. That's why everybody hitting on me like Chris. Kilometers. I don't come kilometers. I don't walk that many kilometers. People think I be journey just come. Like I just got rich, like my money just come. Send them back to where they come from. For talking like the product of a torn condom. Southside me come from, me not care, my brother. One side sit down for one chair, my brother.
Pull up the single. Pull up the single turn up. Yeah, yeah. Pull up the single turn up. Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Come for this woo. Yeah. Pull up for certain. Yeah. Can't say the moon. Yeah. You call her sunshine. Yeah. Call me the moon. Baby, gonna find so fine, so fine. Might give her the woo. So fine, might give her the woo. Pull up the team, gon' turn up. Yeah, yeah. Pull up the team, gon' turn up. Yeah, yeah. Pull up the team, gon' turn up. Yeah, yeah. Pull up the team, gon' turn up. Yeah, yeah. Pull up and make it clap. Bust it down on my jeans. Make your niggas spend racks. Pull up and make it clap. Bust it down on my jeans. Pull up and make it clap. Pull up and make it clap. Bust it down on my jeans. Make your niggas spend racks. Pull up and make it clap. Bust it down on my jeans.
De ton ami qui saignait du nez après qu'il soit rentré dans une porte patio fermée, sans rire de lui?
Évidemment.
Avec ton empathie, tu as de l'avenir en santé et services sociaux. Trouve ta place sur québec.ca/carrière en santé. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
On Thursday, February 15th at 7 p.m., Arc MTL and L'Afro Musée present St. Antoine Street Paradise, an evening with soul legend Skipper Dean. Join legendary Montreal soul and R&B singer Skipper Dean for a journey through the nightclubs around St. Antoine Street in downtown in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. This free event for Black History Month happens on Thursday, February 15th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Afro Musée, 533 Ontario Street East, corner Barrie. Find out more about this new collaboration between Arc MTL and the Afro Musée on the website knightsofmontreal.com. A CKUT co-presentation.
Ascoltate emissione della radio Marcaro Penose 3 FM CKUT.
dar uneori tot e nepas. Ia-ți pătura și hai cu mine pe terasă. Hai să stăm pur și simplu și să povestim. La ce visăm, ce frici avem, la ce ne gândim. Mă tem să ajungem să fie totul perfect. Perfecte doar în filme, e special effect. Eu vreau doar să fim noi și să zâmbim mai des.